Huh. Okay, Glo. You thought I was going to miss it this time.
I was just waiting.
It's your turn. Glo always keeps us up to date with what's happening in Washington and with HMTRI. So, Glo, what's up?
Actually, I don't have a whole lot. I haven't heard from headquarters now in a couple of days. I know they're just incredibly busy up there, but I haven't heard of any new webinars that they have coming out or anything. So I would have to assume that's all good news, but I don't have any updates from headquarters. From HMTRI, the hotel deadline for making your hotel reservations for the all grantee meeting this year is on Monday next week, July 17th. We are going to try to get that deadline extended, but if you plan to attend and you have not made your hotel reservation, please do so before Monday. At this year's meeting, we're actually trying something new. We have 5 slots that we have opened up to grantees to bring one of their students, either a current student or a graduate of their program, to come and be on a panel so that they can talk to the audience and give a different perspective, what it's like from the student's point of view. So I think that should be pretty interesting. We did this many, many years ago, not at a grantee meeting, but at an assessment meeting, where we were in San Francisco, and actually the San Francisco program brought their entire class to our workshop, and it was just incredible. So I have high hopes for this one. I am also been working on the agenda, and I know that headquarters has too. They are making arrangements for various offices to be at this year's meeting like they have in the past, and I am in the process of getting confirmations from grantees on various topics that they will present on, however it relates to their own program. So hopefully I will be able to get those confirmations out yet this week. If not this week, then early next week. That's it for me, Mike.
Great. And any of you on the call, that if you can get to Alexandria, sign up with Glo, because most everything else is paid for, the conference, and there's some lunches that are included in it, and there's no conference fees, and the hotel is paid. And it's a great time for you. And as a PLC member, you're invited to the conference. You get to talk to the EPA people at headquarters in Washington. You get to talk to, and you'll be in small groups with your regional coordinator. You get to talk to them on a personal level. In a group level, you'll also get to see all of the other grantees in your region. We're going to have some networking. We're going to do some things in the morning that we're just going to kind of like a speed, not a speed dating, but a speed introduction type thing, where you go around and talk to some of the other grantees quickly. We're going to be doing these breakout sessions on different topics, and we're going to have 2 grantees and a regional coordinator, and they're just going to be starting the discussion. They're going to be talking a little bit about their program, like what we do in these PLCs, and then they're not going to be formal presentations so much as getting the conversation started. And after they talk about it, different people in the room will talk about their programs. And the whole idea here is to try to find out what works, what doesn't work. I call them really good ideas, and then I call them landmines, things that people have tried and they just don't work. So it's a good time to find out what doesn't work and things that really do work, so people go home with some great ideas from this. So if you think you can get to Alexandria, get Glo. Do you want to give them your email?
Yeah, my email is ghanne@eicc.edu. And all I need is your name and where you're from and your contact information. That's all we need to get you registered.
Now, we're sending out post-session notes. Now, if you didn't get an invite from me, you may want to also send us your contact information. We'll make sure if you're getting them, great. You'll get post-session notes on Friday. And we have a lot of this information all in the post-session notes. And they also end up appearing on our website, brownfields-toolbox.org. So you could get the recordings and you can get post-session notes on that. It's delayed of maybe 3 or 4 days, but otherwise you can find them on there. Well, today we're going to talk to Laura, and I can't say too much good about this program. It's a great program. It really started quite a long time ago. It started in the late 60s. Rothenberg, I believe he was a playwright, and felt that the underserved population of New York, those that have histories with incarceration or with the legal system, needed some help. And he started the Fourth Society. They were first funded by EPA and as a stimulus grant in 2011, and then they submitted a grant in 2013, did such a good job on that grant, they resubmitted in 2015 and received another, I call them re-ups, and congratulations, and they received another re-up this year. These are all competitive grants, so because you get one year or 2 years, is no guarantee at all that you'll continue getting them. So it's a real tribute to what they do, and they're servicing Brooklyn, mid and upper Manhattan, South Bronx, the city, and it's an incredible program. What I like about this program, and one of the reasons I wanted Laura to talk about it today, was when we talk about partnerships for sustainability and for services, it's a great example of what happens when you partner with a long-established, deep partner. They have a program that can rely on Fortune Society, which services about 7,000 people a year. They can benefit themselves of all the services that they have in terms of recruitment, placement, in terms of mental services, health services, and I'm not sure if this program does free lunches, but they have meal services. It's incredible. It's incredible, Laura. Could you tell us about your program and a little bit about your program and its relationship to the Fortune Society?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And actually, this is the 50th anniversary of Fortune Society this year, so definitely a long-running program that basically started from just volunteer-based to now having pretty much as many services that we could possibly provide for people who are formerly incarcerated. So our entire population that we work with at our nonprofit are just persons with touch points within the criminal justice system, so anywhere from arrested to long-term incarcerated. So within this program, I'm sure very similarly to everybody else on this call, we target doing job training specific to environmental remediation for people who are formerly incarcerated, which is a six-week program that we try to also link in with internships that we leverage with other funding and partnerships as well. So when we partner for recruiting, I will say at this point I'm very fortunate to have more applications than I have slots at this point since the program has been so long running, and I get a lot of applications simply from word of mouth from other people that have gone through the training program. But the startup to this was definitely having long established connections and leveraging those with the parole and probation offices in our region. So we personally have an office directly in Rikers Island for the city jail system where we try to do transitional services and work with people that we know are going to be released soon who might be interested in this program to start that transitioning process as early as possible. And we frequently do outreach and orientations within the parole and probation offices for the state and federal systems, which if you're interested in working with these with this particular demographic, and you're not already working with that particular system, it can be cumbersome. It did take us a very long time to kind of get the flow down for what exactly we're looking for and what kind of services we provide and when people should be reaching out to us in order to establish a good flow. But since we started working on this project, we actually had developed such a good relationship with our local parole officer that we decided to partner with the Queens County Parole and Probation Office to design a task force that's specifically working in direct connection with our organization and the parole office to have a regularly standing job readiness and cognitive behavioral training to onboard people to the rest of our services, kind of meeting them where they are, which is very important because I'm sure you guys all know when you're recruiting, even if they're not formally incarcerated persons, everybody kind of comes with their own barrier that they're looking for long-term sustainable employment. And I think a main draw with this program and the persons that I've seen wanting to enroll in it is that there's a really great natural reaction there. If you have somebody who's been formally incarcerated for a long time, they're not just looking for a job, they're looking for something that's a long-term steady career, particularly if you read any research about recidivism, one of the key factors for somebody being successful in the community is obtaining economic stability. So the draw to this program is not necessarily just it's career-oriented, but the specific jobs that we're working with our employers to train people for are those that are really great for the community. So New York City has a significant amount of environmental justice issues that have been very historic, and there's a huge overlap between environmental justice issues and social justice issues. So being able to tie in that bigger picture within a program that we've developed into how we're kind of taking back the city in a way, to being able to focus on local job investment for environmental improvements within the community, it makes for a very fulfilling job training and job experience. So once somebody is enrolled in the program, we try as much as we can to have specific targeted field trips with our employers out in these brownfields and Superfund sites that we know are very apparent to our constituents that are enrolled in our program because they've probably grown up in these neighborhoods or they've probably recognized that there's a significant amount of vacant lots and a changeover from manufacturing to residential, and it really draws in a unique curiosity into not only wanting to know more about the community but how to really fix it and improvement. So with that, we have a lot of connections that kind of feed off of each other. So we have a population of students who are interested in really committing themselves to this particular career path, which is in and of itself a huge driving motivator. Because we're involving our employer partners, they're kind of seeing how everybody's really developing along the way. And with all these field trips that are reaching out to our community partners who are helping to coordinate different local initiatives that tie into these environmental programs, from like urban agriculture to stormwater resiliency to recycling, by the time we come to graduation and job placement, it's like the community partners and the employers were there along the way for the whole cohort. So they've been kind of in the same club, which has been very beneficial for networking. And even if they don't end up applying for a job or interested in a position with these employers that have been participating with us, by the time they're going on the interview process, they could kind of walk the walk and talk the talk. So it's not just I have a certification in HazWhopper, but I know what Langen is doing for environmental remediation on this specific project, and what is your site doing in comparison to what this other industry leader is doing, which puts us in a really great position now. But I will say if you're starting off on your program, don't be too discouraged if you realize that this isn't happening overnight. I love starting off the program and developing the curriculum with the partners that I knew going into this project, but I could definitely say our program is so much more unique and stabilized and just a really great pillar for our services at Fortune than it was 5 years ago. And I continuously hope to work with our staff and work with our clients and employers to continue to fill that in and see what the next bigger, better thing is and trying to fit that into the larger regional economy. I will say for working with this population, of course, it comes with its own unique characteristics. From going to other annual grantee meetings and meeting a lot of other providers that may or may not work with this population, I can't say there are unique things to factor in. My orientation isn't nearly as strict as maybe some others are. For us, our programs, we do try to meet people halfway. We know that housing is a huge issue. We know that a lot of people are also co-enrolled in treatment and mental health services. So I don't necessarily turn somebody away if they don't miss the first orientation. I'll schedule them for a second orientation and see what happens there. But just because somebody has a slight pitfall throughout the course of the program, that's not necessarily grounds for a complete dismissal in the program. What we try to do is recognize what an issue is, try to connect them with the right case manager or department within our organization, if possible, to kind of field those issues too. So some of my most successful clients, I've enrolled in a program for the first cohort. Maybe they didn't stick through it for the first cohort, but I've re-enrolled them in the third cohort, and then they've gone on to very successful careers after that. Which I think might be unique in terms of how other organizations might be running their programs, which may or may not work out. We found that this is something that's more beneficial to us to have a little bit of flexibility and partnership with different case managers here than it is to just say, well, you tried. We could refer you to another program. The biggest things that you would have to work on, which again has to do with the parole offices and developing a good relationship, is that knowing that somebody had been recently released, they're going to have potentially court dates that they need to go to, reporting to the parole office. If they're co-enrolled in a mental health or treatment services provider, they may have different appointments too. So if you are really active in assisting this population, the most you can work with your training provider and your staff to develop a program, knowing that you need to keep flexibility in mind, is definitely going to pay out in the long run. Because when we initially set up this program 5 years ago, I was a little bit more strict. I was, here's a 9-to-5 program. If you're not going to show up, if you miss a day, you're missing out on this certification. Way to go for getting this far. We'll be in contact for next steps. But now I've worked with Ando International, who's our training provider, who knows that we need a little bit more flexibility. So if we have somebody who misses part of the certification process, we have it built into our contract that we could do specific amount of makeups. So that way, knowing that somebody's missing a particular training because of a court date, you don't want to necessarily penalize somebody for a mandatory thing that they need to go to. So keeping that in mind is really important. Another thing that I like to do and that our training coordinator does is at the point of orientation during the program, we have everybody put together a calendar and contact information. So if somebody knows that they have specific court dates or specific appointments, whatever we can do on the forefront to give a call to a parole officer or write a letter or reach out to a residential facility to let them know that this person's enrolled in the program, that they may need to move around different appointments. We try to do that as soon as possible so that way we're not running into issues, even though we still might run into scheduling issues in the past or in the future once they're enrolled in the program. But I'm rambling. So what kind of questions do you have?
Well, I've got a question, and this is
sure.
Interesting because, Laura, we've got a lot of programs to work with ex-offenders. There's approach that many of them take is the boot camp. You know, we're going to run 5 miles. You miss one, you're out, da-da-da. You're on the opposite side of the scale, and it's interesting that both work. They're just different approaches. And
I know, and I definitely send credit to that because I tried doing the boot camp thing, and for our organization, it wasn't as successful. And I know that it's definitely successful in other organizations too. I personally find that very interesting as well.
And everyone's going to have to decide their own approach. The other thing that I find interesting that you have that not many people do have is you've got this incredible host of services. You teach the environmental program, but you've got a mental health group. You've got so many support services within your organization, which is fantastic, that other people don't have.
Yeah, it is beneficial, particularly since so many of our clients come from different boroughs in New York. Our main service site is located in Queens. So getting somebody from the Bronx to come to Queens might be an hour and a half on the subway. So it's definitely helpful that once people are here, we try to have as many services as here as possible, so that way the convenience for going to different appointments is kind of cut down. So on our site here, we provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner 5 days a week. We have our GED program and our workforce. We do health services and try to get as many mobile health service providers here for just regular scheduled appointments. We have a treatment services facility. So if somebody is currently involved in a treatment program or a residential program, we try to work with them to see if they could do some of their services here instead while they're enrolled in our training programs to limit the back and forth. We have a full family services unit, which has been particularly helpful since we do the asbestos license in New York State. If somebody, for instance, has back due child support because they weren't paying it when they were incarcerated, sometimes your license for asbestos could be suspended because you have back due payments. What we've been able to do is work with a family lawyer service provider here that interacts frequently with the Department of Labor to write letters saying that the whole reason somebody needs an asbestos license is to get economic stability to be able to work on these child support payments. And they are able to put together a delayed payment plan, so that way they're also able to obtain their license and find full-time employment, which was something that I definitely had to learn the first year when I got a bunch of people successfully these asbestos licenses that they weren't able to use afterwards.
I noticed on your website that you have other programs or identify them. You've got soft skills programs. You've got a CDL program. You've got mm-hmm. transitional programs. Can you send your students to these other programs within Fortune's big program?
Sure, yeah. So we do, one of the programs that definitely works well, depending on where somebody is interested in being placed, is our commercial driver's licenses program, and we also do a standard driver's licenses program. So that way we could do referrals if somebody needs to be able to drive a truck or a regular car, because within the environmental field, you're often doing a lot of different site visits. So that's something that we do on a rolling basis. So if somebody goes in for a job interview and they realize that that's something that they want to and need to have in order to accelerate themselves within that career, we work with them to connect them with that opportunity. And I had mentioned before our internship program, particularly if somebody had been incarcerated for a very long time, they might not have a recent job history to report on their resume. So what we try to do is connect them with an employer in the field, so that way they have a 3 month part-time paid job experience within this career, utilizing the certifications and training that they just obtained. So that way they have newer job references, newer skills to put on their resume, and are able to be a little bit more marketable than just going into the job search process, having just completed a career and maybe not having any experience that's similar prior in their work history.
You like an internship. What you've got that probably many of the people on the call don't have or wish they had, you've got all these services in your organization, and this is the big benefit of partnering with a large organization. You were able to bring environmental remediation education into someone who didn't have it before as a result of getting EPA startup funds and getting it going. So you could take this unique program and add to their cadre of services for the community, and it's really great, which there are a lot of programs out there that are either standalone or they're linking with maybe a construction program, but they don't have that depth that you have. So they have to go out and try to find partners that can do all of the things that you're doing. And that's, I think,
Hi.
One of those things.
My call yes. got dropped. I'm sorry. This is Laura again.
Okay. Can everyone hear me? Hopefully we're okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. What I'm getting at is when we talk about these partnerships, and a lot of you are just starting, some of you are just starting to look at your proposal for the next re-up or for the next first submission of your grant. And Laura has shown us this tremendous benefit of going to a partner that doesn't have this environmental remediation education offering and sell them on the idea, I can add another component to your program, but in return, what I need is your support services. I need your placement. I need your in-kind. I need your resume building. I need your mental health counseling, or I need your contacts to link into your, I call it a moving train. It's a lot easier to add a caboose onto a train than to build a whole train. And actually, that's what Laura has done here. Rather than she's added one car to a huge moving train and been able to use all the services that are out there rather than having a car and trying to make a railroad out of it. And so the lesson I think here is it's as difficult as the problem she had. It's much easier when you've got access already going on and you've got this momentum. Now, if you don't, and you, those of you who are at the beginning of this process or those of you that may want to re-up or maybe you didn't get the grant this time, you may want to look at those partners in your area. Are there organizations like SAFER or organizations like Fortune or maybe a Goodwill or an organization that you could go and perhaps your partners aren't as strong this time as they could be and maybe look at them and make this proposal. We can add this whole area of environmental remediation to your offerings. But we need to do these things in kind and to make our program better. If there's no hope and you're in a rural area and there are no such organizations, and this is the very first thing you do in developing a job training program is scan, do this assessment of the whole area. Who's out there? What kind of nonprofits do I have to support me? What kind of community organizations? What kind of private sector organizations can I get these services from? And if you can't, then you got to start looking for these services individually that you could kind of bring into the fold. And that's one of the problems with the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program is it's very narrow in what they're going to fund. It's not a Department of Labor program with hundreds of millions of dollars. They're funding the environmental remediation. So it's up to you to make these partnerships work, which is, it is a challenge. It certainly is not easy. Anyone have some questions of Laura? What she's doing up there. I'm going to put in the notes, and they've got a very good training program. I'll put in their notes about their what they're offering and a little bit about that and about their demographics and what they're doing. And, of course, all of you who are coming to All Grantee Meeting will be able to sit down and talk to Laura and see exactly what they're doing, get some hints from her. Anyone have anything to add or suggest? Okay. Hey, well, we'd like to keep these down to 30 minutes or so. Laura, it's been great. You're
yes,
doing a great job.
So thank you.
And thank you, everybody. And we'll talk to you on the 26th.
Yeah, and see you guys at the conference.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.